Welcome to our program. I'm Richard Dugan, and the phrase, music makes the world go round, does that sound familiar to you? Well, music can have a profound impact on your life and the way that you see the world, the way that you react to one another and situations in your life in a wide variety of different ways. Studies have borne this out. Classical music can make a big difference versus, say, heavy metal or rap or country or whatever genre you want to bring up, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you. Oh.
My guest is Richard Franklin Morris, and he is a musician, and he has a CD self-titled Richard, only it's not spelled like you would think. It's R-Y-C-H-Y-R-D, and Richard, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
It was interesting to come across the material that you have. You have written songs that are obviously near and dear to your heart because that's where they come from. Whereas I find it interesting that a lot of musicians who have started out, and especially the ones that I've listened to as I was growing up, they had to sing the songs they were given, had a great voice, or they had a voice that was marketable or that people liked to listen to. But the record companies would say, these are the songs we want you to sing. And then as they grew in popularity and they grew in finances and the wherewithal and the reputation, they were then able to move into, I'm going to write my own songs and they're going to come from me and my experiences and my life. And I don't have to necessarily sing what other people are writing. But you're starting out that way. Is that correct? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I just gathered my money together and financed the whole thing myself. And I had thought that it's such a blessing that there's nobody saying this is right for your image and you can't record that. In fact, my album sounds a lot like a compilation album. Some people have asked me, did you sing all those things? Because there's a couple songs where it doesn't even sound like the same person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was using as my model the way the Beatles were later in their career when they could do anything. You know, like the White Album, it sounds like it might have been recorded by several different people. And I thought, well, you know, it worked for them. And since I am financing this myself and I have the freedom to do absolutely anything I want, I just picked the songs that I've written that I enjoy the most.
Music, mm-hmm. singing and playing, you I would assume you play several different types of instruments?
Not really. I'm basically a singer-songwriter, and I play guitar to accompany myself live. But it's not really my thing, and following the principle, follow your bliss. I do what I like, which is to write and sing. And then I hired people for this album that are just the most brilliant musicians. I went down to Nashville where these people can play.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable. So it was like playing in an all-star band. You know, here's the best musicians you can imagine backing me up. It felt good.
One of the reasons that we have you and other folks like yourselves on the program is to bring to us new paradigms for a new world.
Mm-hmm.
And through your music, in essence, you are working towards creating a new world. You've certainly created a new world for yourself. What were you doing before you made the decision to take the leap into music? Or was music that leap that you took? Was there another leap before that? And was there this ordinary, mundane, 9-to-5, workaday Richard Morris? And finally you reached the point you said, I've had enough of this. I have to go a different direction.
Yeah, actually, the direction my life took had a lot to do with one remarkable conversation that I had in the 1980s. I was a real estate agent, and that was a job that was very stressful for me because I was...
Oh, you'd be doing great right now.
I was doing great then. I was doing great. I was one of the top guys up in Petaluma in Northern California, but I didn't enjoy it because it wasn't really something I was passionate about. It was mm-hmm. just a way to make a living. And I was at a transformational seminar when I got some really bad news about my career that was, you know, somebody was backing out of a deal. I was really upset. And a fellow sat down with me because he could see I was in crisis. And he just sat down and said to me, okay, so tell me the truth. You don't really want to do this job, do you? And I said, well, no. He says, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, well, what I really want is to be a musician, but that's impossible. He says, okay, set aside for a moment that it's impossible and just imagine what it would be like.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I started thinking, okay, so I get up in the morning and pick up my instrument and have a cup of tea and write a song or, you know, get an idea. And then I go out in the evening and play, and it feels like so much fun. And this is something that would be very, very exciting if it were only possible. Now, of course, at this point, I've been talking to him for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm still thinking it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I would think about it, the better it felt and the more I wanted to do it. And after a while, and now this is fast forward to maybe 6 months later, I just started thinking, why not? You know, and the answers were crazy. The answers to why not were things like, people would think I was going nuts because, and they really did. I mean, when I gave notice at my real estate office and they said, why would you throw away this career? You know, they all thought I was undergoing a midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's one of my mottos is one should always be having a midlife crisis because midlife crisis means to me, you are reassessing your life,
mm-hmm.
that you're looking and saying, is this where I really want to be going?
Mm-hmm.
Is this really true for me now? Or mm-hmm. is this career or this place where I'm living or whatever circumstance it is this perhaps just what I wanted 10 years ago? And I'm just doing it out of habit. So I tend to continually reinvent myself now and just kind of say, well, okay. Yeah, this was a wonderful experience. For example, my focus as a musician during the 1990s was being a live musician. And after a while, the life kind of went out of being a live musician. It ceased to be so much fun. I was staying up later than I wanted to, so wasn't working the hours.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expressing what I really wanted to express anymore. And, you know, so I took a look at it again and said, okay. I was thrilled to do this. Like all through the 90s, I just used to, you know, get up on stage with this really joyful, excited feeling, but it's not fun anymore. So where's the fun now? And that's when I got into doing my own original songs, which once again, it always seems to me, at least the pattern in my life is, like when I had that conversation in the 1980s, when the gentleman says, what would you like to do? And I said, well, you know, be a musician, but it's impossible. So then fast forward to the 1990s, and I'm thinking, well, what I'd really like to do is to be doing my own original songs and be giving concerts and be a recording artist, but that's impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It seems like there is a pattern of things when I want to make a change in my life, some voice in my head starts out by saying, it's impossible. And it's only later when it's accomplished then that I look back and say, well, that was easy.
I believe that's an old Perry Como song.
Yeah. It's impossible to put a Cadillac up your nose.
Steve Martin, yeah. I was just thinking the same thing.
We're in the zone.
But the reality is that it is possible. And that what we are trying to do with this program is to tell people just that remove the it's impossible phrase, and as you did with this friend of yours, start imagining what it would be like. It's not to say that you're going to do it today or tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
but it does mean that you could be doing it if you really wanted to and you'd find a way to do it. Now, you say you're self-financed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a wealthy relative who died to leave you all this money to be able to do this? Or was this just through your real estate business? Because there are those of us who are sitting here going, I have these dreams, but, and then cha-ching, the cash register sound, if mm-hmm. you will, that wherewithal isn't there. How do I make that happen so I can go in that direction? Because In one of our interviews, I spoke with one of our guests who basically said that we have a dilemma, and you were in that dilemma in real estate, and that is that you were making lots of money, but there was no meaning. And a lot of people will then go the other way, and they'll go into that area where there's all that meaning, but there's no money there. And so it's like we need money to function and survive and move forward in our lives. How do we bring those two together? So what's your suggestion? Or I should say, how did you bring that about is really what it is. How did you bring that about?
Yeah, well, in the case of becoming a musician in the first place in the 1990s, that didn't take any money. But the experience had an interesting aspect to it, which was this. I had thought the reason I can't be a musician is that I don't want to starve. Musicians don't make any money. This is one of my limiting beliefs I had at the time. I would make no money as a musician, and therefore I must stay in real estate because I'm making money. Well, once I got up the courage to sell everything I owned and get a ticket over to Europe, and I started playing music on the street, actually, in Heidelberg, Germany, in Amsterdam, people started just coming and offering me work. I mean, it was astonishing. All I had to do was just answer the telephone, and one thing led to another. And the next thing you know, I was making more money than I had made as a real estate agent, particularly because as a musician, I could work in blue jeans and a T-shirt and didn't have to buy all those expensive suits. And I had a big dry cleaning bill when I was a real estate agent. So that was how that one worked out, was that I was just doing what I loved, and the money did follow, like the title of that book, Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow. Mm-hmm. People were just following all over themselves to pay me a lot of money to sing for them. Mm. This time, in order to finance this album, because it was just always my dream project, was someday I want to record a real top-quality album like... you know, like the record companies do, but of course that does cost some money. Mm-hmm. The way I managed that was that for the last several years, I have been making a living during this transition from doing the music work that I was doing to what I'm doing now. I was making a living selling things on eBay. I started buying things on eBay in the, what do you call this decade? The early 2000s. And
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not over yet, so we haven't quite named it.
Yeah, the zero decade.
Mm-hmm. This is the aught.
Yeah, the they used to decade. That, 1906.
I remember 19-aught.
So, I just realized when I first discovered eBay, I thought, my goodness, somebody could make a lot of money here. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I started buying things and then selling them again. And... made a good deal of money that way. I always, though, saw it as a stepping stone to financing my album and my new career.
Mm-hmm. Now, you financed it and you had it produced. Did you then have to go into Los Angeles or one of the major studios, or where were you able to produce this? And granted, to many of our listeners, we're going, well, why are you getting into so many specifics? Because what we're going to show you is the specifics kind of work themselves out, don't they? The details, the physical material details tend to work themselves out if you are following your bliss, your dream, mm-hmm. and that type of stuff.
Yeah, in my experience, if you know what you want, the details do sort themselves out. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, how I managed to do this, you just find a way. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly I have found when I get excited enough about something that I want, there's just some way that the opportunity shows up. And in the case of being able to make my album, that's a very simple thing. I have a brother who also makes albums. He's a Christian artist, and he's got a studio in his house. So mm-hmm. I went over to his house. I still had to pay him, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you know, it did cost me something. It wasn't just like it was handed to me. And
right.
and the musicians... musicians are wonderful, but you know, they're $100 an hour, but mm-hmm. worth every cent.
Right.
Those Nashville musicians are just great.
And we're going to listen to them in just a moment along with you off of your self-titled album, Richard, and talk a little bit more about the music that you've created and obviously buying that one-way ticket to Germany. My wife and I have been to Ireland twice, and after the first trip, we fell in love with the place. We want to move there. We make no bones about it. That's where we want to wind up.
Ireland is awful nice.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. And we don't necessarily, I don't ever want to, I found that when you say, I never want to do this, it usually happens, you know.
Sometimes.
So I let that, I just say, you know what, we will live where we live. But we have found a beautiful small little town, a little hamlet, if you will, of about 1,200 people.
Mm-hmm.
We fell in love with the town. We bed and breakfasted there for the equivalent of 2 weeks over the 4 weeks that we did stay in Ireland, the two trips that we took. I suppose we might live in Dublin or Cork or one of the other larger cities, but I'll tell you, living where I do here in Santa Barbara, California, up on the hill in the urban area, in the rural area, I beg your pardon, of this part of the country, I absolutely love living away from the city. And it is a beautiful, beautiful place that we live. Mm-hmm. And so I can work down in the city, and then I know that when I'm done working, I can go up the road, up the mountain road, and get away from the traffic and the noise and all of those different things and just enjoy nature. If you've just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan. I am joined by Richard Franklin Morris, and he is a musician who has created his This Is Your First album / CD.
Well, I would call it my breakthrough album.
Breakthrough
it's
album.
It's the one where I finally just said, I'm really going to do this. I'm going to go all out. I'm going to say exactly what I wanted to say and record exactly what I wanted to record with no considerations for commerciality and so forth.
Okay.
So it's my breakthrough album.
Well, we are going to take a listen to that breakthrough album. Stay with us. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story, and this is Richard Franklin Morris. And let your dreams make you come true.
Make you come true. Let your fantasy be your destiny. Where is the dream you set aside? The one you tried to hide, kept locked up inside, denied. What if that dream that had to wait came again to say that it's not too late today? Let your dreams make you come true. Let your fantasy be your destiny. Let your dreams make you come true. Alive. Let it come alive. What would you do if you knew you could never lose? What then would you choose to do? How would it feel to be free? To live your deepest dream and know that you'd succeed, guaranteed. Let your dreams make you come true. Let your fantasy be your destiny. Let your dreams make you. Love alive. Let it come alive.
Richard Franklin Morris, and Let Your Dreams Make You Come True. And that is actually a rather profound statement, in that it is really through our dreams that we become the genuine self, that that we become the real person that we are, mm-hmm. are striving to become.
Yeah, that was why I wrote it, because I realized when that phrase came to me, I thought, ah, now that says something worth hearing, which is that the point of why do you want your dreams to come true in the first place? And in my life, the point of me following my dreams was not to have monetary success or even more personal satisfaction necessarily. What was important to me was that there was a certain development of the soul and self-actualization and unfolding of who I really am. And that was the exciting part about it. If I imagine what my life would have been like if I stayed in my old job, which I could have easily done, I just think, my goodness, it would be a whole different person. The person that would be there would just not be, it wouldn't be who I am now, mm-hmm. in any event. I mean,
yeah.
I've been living in Europe for the last 16 years and working as a professional musician. That is such a completely different life than if I had always stayed where I was, which was, I wish I were a musician, but it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's no fun at all.
Yeah. I know that there are those who are listening who have those dreams.
That's why I'm here.
Exactly.
I'm talking to that guy.
Exactly. Or gal.
I'm talking to whoever
it is
are.
that's turned on the program or downloaded the interview and is listening, and it's like, yeah, I have this dream. And really, as far as we're concerned right here in this moment, don't go any further than I have this dream.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on it. Feel it. Taste it. Smell it. Do everything that you can to bring it, make it real for you right now.
And get happy about
especially get happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was sharing in a conversation with a friend of mine not too long ago, he was really getting on me about focusing on more of the practical things. You know, great mm-hmm. show, but you need to focus on those real material things that people are out there doing.
Mean focusing on the how?
On the how.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, let me stop you there. Let me ask you a question. What do you really want? And I was expecting maybe a few items. You know, I want this thing and I want that thing and I want this job and I want this relationship and this car and on and on and on, which is, again, and that's okay. If that's what you want, then again, get the 5 and/or 6 senses rolling on it. And mm-hmm. start feeling it in the now and be happy about it. He said, I want self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, okay, all right. I said, then I'm going to show you why we do what we do with the show. So I took him through a process that I'd never gone through with anybody before.
Mm.
He was the first. So I just held my first seminar, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I said, all right, I want you to go back in time. Is there ever a time when you felt self-confident? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Because he was upset about the fact that he kept having all of these self-destructive, self-defacing thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I says, I want you to go to that moment where you felt self-confident, and I want you to bring it to the present, and I want you to feel it. Now, I want you to feel it, and I want you to hold on to that feeling as long as you can. And remember how that feels. And every time you have those self-defeating thoughts that you talk about, I want you to grab that memory of self-confidence, even if it was in the past, and bring it to the present moment and feel it. And every time that happens, just keep doing it. And don't beat yourself up for having those thoughts. They're yours. And it's okay. We all have them.
Well, what I find also, though, is that self-confidence tends not to be so much an issue if you are really aligned and inspired with mm-hmm. what it is that you're up to.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in my own experience with this album, there was a period of time when I did not feel self-confident about it, because I was caught up in different fears about how would it be received and so forth. And I noticed that when I thought of calling up radio stations, I did not feel well about it. Physically, I just didn't get a good feeling in my body. And I decided to let go of it until I feel inspired and, excited about taking an action. So I did. I just didn't make any contact with radio stations at all until I heard your radio show. And I thought, now this is exactly the audience that I want to speak to. I'm going to call Richard Dugan. And then there was no question about, do I feel confident? It was just, this is what I want to do. It makes me happy to think about it. I think self-confidence questions sometimes are if I'm trying to get myself to do something that I'm not really ready for, maybe it's either premature or it's not really aligned with my purpose. And so the lack of self-confidence sometimes I think is my higher self saying to me, no, don't go this way. You know, it might be some real truth being expressed, because I just noticed that when I am in inspired action, the self-confidence questions go away.
Well, and of course, as I was sharing with him, I did get that sense from him that he, even though that was a great thing that he wanted, was the self-confidence, I know that there's more there that he wants. I know that there is something he wants to do that, as you've just described, will make that issue go away, because he will be in that inspired place of being the true, genuine self that he is. And but he has to find that. Each one of us has to find that. It's interesting how I've been doing this for nearly 30 years, broadcasting, and I remember my father telling me, get into a job and a career that you love doing, because you're going to be doing it for a long time.
Well,
because
that's good advice.
I didn't. Because I didn't, he says, and he, you know, all these different things.
That's
and
I've good said, advice.
And I've talked to him about that too, as well. And he went to computer school in the '70s, and learned how the process worked. He used to come home with those big boxes of the punch cards and the fanfold paper and the whole thing. That was when, you know, we were still dealing in DOS back in the '70s, and there were no personal computers.
I remember.
And that kind of thing. So, you know, he loves them today, and he and I, we talk about the different things, and he plays around with the software that I use for sound editing and all of these wonderful things. And he's in his 70s. He's in his mid-late 70s, having a great time, just having a blast. So he is now retired, but he is now doing the things that he really enjoys doing that bring him happiness. And that makes me feel really good that he has found that, because I know that he didn't find that through his 20s and 30s and 40s and into his 50s before he decided to I guess hang up the shingle, so to speak, and retire.
Yeah.
I joke with people saying that they're going to have to peel my dead, lifeless corpse off the console, because I don't plan on retiring. I enjoy conversing. I enjoy bringing people in to talk about their dreams, where they're coming from, where they're going.
Yeah,
and where are you going, Richard? I don't want to say, where will you be in 5 years, 10? Where would you like to be in 5, 10, 20, 30 years? What's your next step in this process?
Well, my next step actually just came about a couple weeks ago. I had always secretly dreamed of being a spiritual teacher, a transformational teacher. And I got invited just right before I flew here. I'm in California for vacation right now. Right before coming here, I was invited to lead a seminar, and that was so much fun, and I did a concert afterwards. So a friend and I are planning to organize a whole bunch of events where I teach something and then in the evening play a concert, or even just sort of mix the music and teaching together. And that was just really, really wonderful. It was another one of those things where I had dreamed of it for years and had thought, well, I can't imagine how that could come about. But through a series of odd coincidences, as these things often happen, I got this chance to do it. It worked out brilliantly, and it was lots of fun. And playing off what you were saying about retiring, I just was having a conversation this morning with my partner in Germany that we're putting courses on together now. And we both said, yeah, I can't imagine retiring from this. Anyway, people in that kind of work usually don't. I mean,
yeah.
Louise Hay is in her 80s.
Yeah.
Most spiritual teachers just seem to keep going.
And she probably will continue to do what she's doing. However, yeah. She isn't giving interviews because I've tried. At least not yet.
I saw her on Oprah.
Ah.
And you know, she would give an interview to Oprah.
Well, Oprah can get anything.
Oprah can get me.
That's true.
Anytime.
Well, it's exciting to see that process unfold for you. I have actually thought about that, and I remember having the opportunity to teach at a couple of broadcast schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to teach for, I think it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours or something along those lines. And I wasn't worried about what to teach because they told me, here's what we want you to focus on. Here's an outline that we have, but obviously you can mm-hmm. put it together however you want. I went in there and I couldn't believe how fast the hour went.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much fun I had. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to instill in the students that I was teaching a love for, in this class, a love for this business, a love for what you do either in front of the mic or behind the mic, meaning away, not on the air and maybe voicing things or maybe in the technical arena, what have you, that you have to know that this is what you want to do and that you want to make a difference, that you want to make a change in the way things have always been done. I've been mm-hmm. trying to do that for 30 years. That's why I went to one of those 6-month technical schools. And I jokingly say that I knew more going in than I did coming out, because it was a good experience, but I didn't feel like it was run by really, really qualified people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was 19, 20, 21 years old, and, you know, what did I know? I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer when it came to assessing, you know, whether people have what it takes in that regard. Nonetheless, I've learned so much. I've come so far. I'm now here from Phoenix and having a great time, and it's a wonderful thing. When we bring people on the program to talk about their path and what they've gone through and what they hope to go through, again, we hope to inspire others mm-hmm. to do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, the point of this work of teaching transformational seminars and mm-hmm. law of attraction principles and also of being a singer, it's to inspire people to do what they love to do and to live the life that they love, because eventually it has a ripple effect out in the world. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if everybody was doing what they love to do, there's a lot of things that would disappear, like road rage, and a lot of the stress that people are under mm-hmm. comes from that they're doing some job that they don't like, and that they feel like the circumstances have sort of trapped them. And I just want to spread the message as much as I can. Whatever the circumstances of your life are that you think have you stuck,
yeah.
If you can focus on that thing that you really, really want, and maybe it's, when I first started this, I couldn't even say out loud, I want to be a musician. It was like just this sort of embarrassing secret, you know. And if you can take that journey from that you can barely even speak the thing that you desire out loud to then more and more clearly being able to see and feel and embody it and be happy about it
mm-hmm.
And pull it into your life, it's a whole different world for the individual who's experiencing that transition, and also for the entire society. I mean, if you've got 100,000 or 1 million people all living like that, I mean, imagine what the world would be like if the guy in the gas station is doing what he loves, and the person who's serving you at the tea house.
Right. And the politician as well. I mean, it covers the gambit. because I see so much lost potential, not just in terms of people who aren't, who are very unhappy doing what they're doing, and they're not about to make any changes because they don't believe that they can, to the loss of life for whatever reason, domestic or foreign, of those people with the incredible potential that will never be realized because they're no longer in this realm. You know, they have transitioned through whatever form, whether it's war or car accident or, you know, on and on and on. I see that there's so much lost potential there, but yet there is still so much untapped potential that will be by those of us who are still here, you know.
Well, and depending upon how your spiritual viewpoint is, we keep coming back anyway.
I suspect that that is true. The intellectual part of me for years used to argue the point, look, I will believe that the day that a child is born who comes back with a rock in its hand from, and that day may come sooner than I think. But there's still, as I've shared with people on this program and in other areas, there is so much more evidence to prove that that is true, that we do just keep coming back. And my wife actually shared with me along those lines. She says the reason we kept coming back is because in spite of all of the negative stuff and all of the down stuff, we like this ride. There's something about this ride that we really like in one sense. Otherwise, we wouldn't keep coming back.
Yeah, I have that sense as well. I think to myself sometimes, well, the soul must really enjoy this. This must be the soul's idea of a day at Disneyland or something. Well, let's go to Earth and have a bunch of experiences. Yep. I want to experience a lifetime in which I dream of doing things, sometimes go through years of struggle before I get up the courage, and then experience the joy of accomplishing it. I want to take that whole journey. If that's the soul's idea of fun, well, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what we do here too. I would set up interviews with folks in the past, and they would ask me if I could send them a list of questions, and my response was always no, to which they usually would respond, well, why not? And I said, because I don't know what I'm going to ask until I'm in the interview. The interviews go where they go. And quite honestly, I don't control them. I mean, where the questions and the thoughts come from, I don't know if it's me, if it is the higher power, the higher self, whatever term you want to use. All I know is when we get into the studio, we get behind the microphones, whether it's live or pre-recorded, it goes where it goes, as does the overall show. I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Will this go on for 6 months or 6 years or 60 years? Doesn't matter. What does matter is where we are today, what we're doing with the time that we are given today in this moment, and trying to stay in this moment and stay on purpose, if you will, as many books have told us about. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and my guest is Richard Franklin Morris, and he is a musician who has put out his breakthrough album. And that was the funny thing about albums. I grew up in the latter stages of vinyl, and then we moved, obviously, cassettes, and of course I'm familiar with reel-to-reels, and I am familiar with 8-tracks, but then we moved into CDs, and now it's just digital, you know, you download it and so forth.
You still got a reel-to-reel back there in the corner.
In the corner. I have one at home as well, and I actually do some archival work for people anytime they want to transfer reel-to-reels to the computer and digitize them. Hey, you know, I can do that.
I wanted to do this album on a reel-to-reel. That was one cost I cut, was that we did it digitally. But a lot of people still, they'll take the album and they'll do it digitally.
There's something about that sound.
Oh, it's warm. It's
beautiful.
The microphones I used on this album, this eBay business, luckily I've gotten into the microphone business. I sell microphones from the 50s and 60s on eBay still. Until I get so busy doing music and teaching seminars that I don't do eBay anymore.
You can set that aside, yes.
I recorded the album on tube microphones that were built in the 1950s, and they sound so beautiful.
Well, I did some archival work for a friend of mine back in Phoenix on some music that was, it's symphonic, it's orchestral, concerts and so forth. And he was bringing me reels that were made in 1950. Mm-hmm. And I would put them on my 1978 TIAC and I would play them. And oh my gosh, the fidelity was just unbelievable. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, the technology of that day is far inferior to the technology of today and yeah. won't sound as good. And it sounds probably better.
Well,
even on that reel-to-reel, awesome.
One of the reasons why tubes sound so good is that you take the sound impulse that's being recorded and they actually translate it into a flame. I mean, there's like a little spark, a flame
glow,
inside
yeah.
of that tube. You translate it into a flame and then you put it on magnetic tape. And there's something about it that just, I think you just, you hear the they call it warmth.
Right, exactly.
Because it's a flame, which, you know, that's also what a human being is. I mean, you know, we're warm-blooded because we're burning fuel all mm-hmm. the time. So I think that it's a sort of a spiritual principle.
I like the transition. That was very good. Very good segue. I like that. Because I'm sitting here going, how did we get over here?
How are we going to bring it back?
Tubes
back
and
into
you
spirit.
You brought it yeah. right back into spirit. It's
born broadcaster.
Absolutely. Yeah. This, to me, is it's a phenomenal experience to be able to express yourself through music. And you made an interesting comment earlier about how, you know, trying to verbalize this sort of, because you still have, you feel that sort of embarrassment about even saying it out loud, you know.
Oh, there were years when I just couldn't.
I want to be a musician, you know.
Oh, I can't see it.
Yeah.
Well, I feel so stupid, but oh, all right. Yeah, I want to be a musician. I want to write songs. Yeah, and it was for a long time just embarrassing, and I had terrible stage fright. Mm-hmm. And but if you get excited enough about it, and you just, like, take these little baby steps in the direction of your dream, it becomes, you know, a little bit easier. You can go a little farther. You can say it out loud.
Start dreaming and be happy about the dream.
That's yeah.
the first step. It really is. And I know that old tapes, old messages that we received as we were growing up also influenced that. I went through the same thing mm-hmm. to where I waited until I was 46, 47 years old before I joined a chorus here in Santa Barbara
mm-hmm.
and I started singing. And
oh, now you're singing Barbershop.
And now I'm singing Barbershop.
Which, that's something I'd love to do.
Oh, I never even thought of it before. And the fascinating thing, going back to my father and the things that we've connected on, I share with him the things that we're doing here in Santa Barbara. Yeah, I used to do that. Really? I didn't know that. That you used to sing Barbershop and that you used to have chickens. We have chickens also. And you, it's like,
it's in your DNA.
It must be. It must be. That's something else. Music. Let's talk about music in a more therapeutic way.
Well, thank you. Cause that's just what was in my mind.
Yeah.
This thing I'm thinking, what I want to talk about is, so this song that you played of mine, Let Your Dreams Make You Come True. My intention behind that song, and the reason I feel particularly blessed to be a musician, a singer-songwriter, as well as teaching seminars, is that you can teach people things in the context of a seminar, giving a lecture. But it's not the same as if you can put it into a song and sing it to them. Somebody did a study that I heard about where if you make something rhyme and put a melody to it, people learn it much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what I did with this song and with some of these other songs is what my friend asked me that time when I had that extraordinary conversation that gave me the courage to go be a musician. The question he was asking me was essentially, what would you do if you knew that you couldn't lose? What would you do if you could do anything? And so I put that into that song as a way of, first of all, the music in that song is intended to be relaxing and kind of, you know, put you in a sort of a calm, receptive frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come in and say, what would you do if you knew that you could never lose? What would you do? And there's this way that the mind works, that if you ask it a question, it pretty well automatically has to answer. So I wanted to just package that up in a really nice way to make you receptive and then ask you this question and get you thinking about it. And in fact, most of that song is in the form of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I say, where is the dream that you set aside? And what if that dream came back and said that it's not too late?
Mm-hmm.
Would you do it?
Yeah.
So it's a special privilege to be able to sing. I realized at one point I was thinking about, what am I actually doing? When I was working in the 90s as a musician, and I thought, okay, well, this is nice because I get paid for it and I enjoy it and it's fun. But what am I actually doing? And it occurred to me that although there are churches in the world that do not allow dancing, there are churches in the world that do not allow artworks, there's all sorts of taboos and things in different churches, but every single church and spiritual tradition that I know of has got singers in it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, like in the Jewish High Holy Days, they don't have instruments, but mm-hmm. they've got singers.
Right, right.
And I thought, my goodness, this is a sacred profession. Mm-hmm. I am not just having fun and making a good living. I'm doing something that's really sacred, and I need to respect this, which is, I think, something that sort of set me going in this direction, that I wanted to do musical things that really had meaning for me and would communicate things in a special way.
And I hadn't even thought about it in that context, but I think you're right in your observation of singing, providing that music, whether it's just the sounds and the notes, or if there's actually some lyrics that are in there to inspire people as well. I would tend to agree with you. Music can assist us, can help us if we allow it to. And certain different types of music, as you well know, has different effects on us.
Yeah.
I mean, it can incite us to craziness, or it can incite us to calmness and peace. It can incite us to energy and excitement or sadness. I mean, and I think, again, kind of going back to, well, apparently the soul likes this ride, and and it also likes the music that goes along with the soundtrack that goes along with this ride. I remember my wife and I were watching a program last night, and it's this new show that's on where this gentleman, he's hearing all of these songs, and he sees the group or the individual singing and what have you, and he has to follow the signs to solve the issue before the end of the show. When I was a kid growing up, we used to sit down a Sunday morning or afternoon, and it wasn't necessarily that I liked these movies, these musicals, but it was what my folks had on, and it was like, well, I didn't want to go outside and play, so I'll sit here and endure this musical. And as I'm watching these musicals, I thought, that would be kind of cool to go through life, and every once in a while, you just break out in song, you know?
And I do it when nobody's watching. I mean, really, I'll just, be walking around cleaning up the house and start singing to myself. It would be fun to do it on the street and have it be like in the movies where a band starts to play.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I remember thinking about this, and I think I shared this with you when we were talking on the phone about how, one of my desires, one of the things that I want to attract is a rather large sum of money. So
yeah,
I started making up a song mm-hmm. about that, that I am the millionaire or billionaire, what have you, that I am living and loving and I'm doing great things and I'm helping people and I'm sharing my abundance mm-hmm. with others to help them as well.
I have a song like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I just sometimes drive around and sing it to myself because it makes me happy.
Yeah, and I thought after I started singing it, it was like as I'm singing it, my mind is going, that's interesting that you would start coming up with that now,
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, too, the dreams that we have that sort of can be brought down to the level of, I just want to be happy. I want to be at peace. Not in terms of just always calm, but I want to be in that place where the phrase, which is very common today, that you hear is, it's all good,
mm-hmm.
really rings true. Really rings true. And you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for staying with us here on the program. By the way, you know, if you miss any part of this interview, you can always go to richarddugan.com, and you can download it or just listen to it off of the website. And you will also be able to access Richard Morris' website, and that is going to be a link right next to the button where you can listen to this interview. So
you'll be able
to go to your website, and you'll be able to listen to your music, because you have those files up there for people to listen to. And I think that's great. Or you can also order the CD, which is Richard, R-Y-C-H-Y-R-D. A little different spelling makes it rather unique for you. And again, as you are a very unique individual because of the type of music that you perform and what your message is that you are trying to get out. And as we come to the end of our program, tell me, what is codified down into, say, 30 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
What is the message that Richard Franklin Morris wants to share with the world?
Oh, my goodness. Can you edit this down and let me think about this for a moment?
I'll tell you what. While you think about that, I'm going to let our listeners...
I want to give to the world.
Let me give you time to think about that. We still have a few moments, so I'm going to let our listeners know. Not only can you go to the website and you can, of course, listen to any of the interviews that we've done over the course of time that we've been on the air, you can also take a listen to some of the other things. You can see who's coming up. We have a schedule of guests that we have coming up and links to their websites if they have one, and most everybody does. So you can go there and you can check out our guests and you can get firsthand information from their websites. You can also email me. I would really love to hear from you. Email address is richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com. And we enjoy your comments and your suggestions. And we will be opening up the phone lines when we are live in studio to take your calls. We have regularly psychics and we have readers and we have people who will answer your questions. And we would definitely like to hear from you. Again, the website is richarddugan.com, RichardDugan.com. And it's richard@richarddugan.com that you can use to email me. And again, all of the links to the various guests and their websites are there on that website. We certainly hope that you will avail yourself of that. And in the last minute or two, Richard, as we've given you an opportunity to think about the question, and I didn't want to put you on the spot, but
I've
at the same time,
it's it.
Well, then give it to us in about 30 seconds before we wrap up.
Yeah. Okay. First, be who you are and be happy about it. Second, that thing that you have been dreaming about doing but you think might be impossible, do it. It's tons of fun, and I can recommend it wholeheartedly. And I'm talking to you and not the person next to you. Do that thing that you've been thinking about.
I think it's interesting. You and I shared before we started the program about a movie and some musicians and a song. Do that thing you do.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Doing that thing you do.
Absolutely. Well, Richard Morris, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's been a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to having you back.
Anytime.
Or I look forward to the opportunity of traveling to Germany and doing the show live from there.
Sure.
I mean,
or I'll come back here.
Absolutely. We'd love to do that. We certainly hope that you've enjoyed the program today, and we hope that you will join us again every Saturday here on the Tell Me Your Story as we bring to you new paradigms for a new world. Your world. Create it. You can make it happen. There is no impossible. Just get that out. Just get rid of that. You don't need it. It's not helpful. Thanks again for joining us, and love to Lal.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married 1913 when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. They want to get you a mail hold right now until the go-no-go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the precious thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.